Hello, and welcome to Evergreen Pinecone Podcast, where we have conversations about issues that are important to you, like faith and family, religion and relationships, Christianity and the church, and a whole lot more. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy Art and Wes as they have a conversation on Evergreen Pinecone Podcast. Okay, welcome to our broadcast. We're sitting here with Wes White and Lacey Shingleton. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing well.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We're less than a week away.
Less than a week? Wow.
I think so. Am I right?
Yeah, next Wednesday.
Do you have all your Christmas presents bought?
I do not. Do you?
I do.
Do you, Lacey?
I do not.
Actually, I had them done last week.
Are you one of those that shops all year long?
No.
No, we're good.
How many presents do you have to buy?
One.
The end.
Just kidding. No, I have a little more than that, but
trivia question.
I've actually already given some of my presents.
I have a trivia question for you all. You know, we did some Christmas movie stuff on our last podcast, and I left one out. What is the first song that you hear in the movie Christmas Vacation? The first song that they are singing at the very beginning of the movie. Does anybody know?
True confession. I have not seen that movie the entire way through.
Oh no.
Okay. Lacey Shingleton.
That concludes our podcast.
This is my resolution. Year's resolution will be.
There you go.
To watch.
How about make it your Christmas resolution?
Okay, Christmas resolution.
Hey, by the way, have you seen the signs in Knoxville?
Yes.
Cousin Eddie says Twitter is full.
Put your phone down.
Put your phone down.
I've seen those. That's an appropriate description for
I want to know who writes those. Because it's not just Christmas time. They have
probably
funny
cousin,
ones like
probably
those.
Cousin Eddie.
He's probably.
Like, this is a good one.
Okay, so you've had enough time to Google it. What's the song?
Joy to the World?
No, it's not Joy to the World, Lacey. If you haven't seen the movie all the way through.
What's your
best
guess?
But you've seen the beginning of it, right?
Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
No, actually, most people think it's Deck the Halls because that's what they sing. But when the movie first starts, it's O Come All You Faithful.
Because they're in the car when the movie starts.
Right. And they're singing O Come All You Faithful.
O Come All You Faithful.
Do you think that they really know what they're singing?
I think Chevy Chase does because he's actually a distinguished theologian. He is a fellow at Oxford.
True story?
That is not a true story.
Okay, just checking.
But it would be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
It would be.
I thought
it give me another reason to like Chevy Chase movies.
I'm pretty sure I did not see that on Facebook. So. Could not be. But you know that they don't sing this line, but the line, what is the line? Word of God now in flesh appearing?
No, it's word of the Father.
Word of the Father now in flesh
appearing. Now in flesh appearing.
And what about the song Hark the Herald Angels Sing? I actually have to read this one because Wes will correct me, obviously, if I
would not do that.
Get wrong.
And I will never disagree with you.
When it says, veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hell, the incarnate deity. What does that mean? Wes is our resident theologian, so I'm going to ask Lacey.
Oh.
What is the incarnation? And what? You tell us what the incarnation is. Wes can tell us what it has to do with Christmas, and we'll wrap this up.
Oh, boy. Okay. So, to the best of my knowledge, the incarnation is Jesus still keeping his divine nature and adding to it humanity by becoming a baby and dwelling with us on earth.
That sounds correct. What's that have to do with Christmas?
I think she answered that at Christmas time. Is it not?
Yeah. Why do people have difficulty with grasping that? You know, we were talking before we came on the air, and I said I never had a problem with that, and you pointed out, Wes, I grew up in a Christian home. And most of our audience is probably a church audience that's listening to this. But really, why do people have trouble grasping that God would be able to come to earth
as flesh, as a human, you know, as both God and man, so to speak.
Well, let's ask our resident theologian, Lacey Shingleton.
What? Why do you guys keep doing this to me?
Well, you gave a great answer on the first
one. Yeah, let's keep it rolling.
Why do people have...
Though she didn't get the Christmas Vacation one right.
I didn't. I'm sorry.
If you were a real theologian, you would have known that.
I would have known.
And you would have watched it.
That's true. I promise I will. So the question is, why do people have a difficult time accepting...
Or grasping it.
Grasping it. I think in the hustle and bustle of... the season of Christmas, I'm not really sure we take a lot of time to think about it or to read about it or to talk about it or to even ask questions about it. So I think a lot of the issue today is that it's not really studied.
This is not an age of thoughtful reflection.
It's not.
I would say, but also, so you have that, but then you also have secularism, which tends to want to look at life as a series of sort of closed cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no supernatural. So, I mean, I think that it's hard for us even to grasp, us who've grown up in the church and with religious language and believing it, how weird it could sound to say that God became a human being. That's just way out there, and for a secular person it's very far removed from where they are. Just, it's like talking about a lot of the miracles of the Bible. I mean, it just probably seems fanciful or far-fetched to them, or some just story. And so, you know, it's easy for us in the church who've grown up with this to really talk to ourselves in a way that's not aware that we're speaking to people who don't have that vocabulary, that language.
There isn't a lot of room in our lives either for the supernatural. I mean, we're so independent, I think, as a culture. I've heard missionaries talk about being in third world countries or just places where they really can't be as independent as we are here, and God is doing some supernatural things, miracles. People see that a little more often, I think, over there or wherever, I guess. And I just don't think we have a lot of room for the supernatural.
Yeah, we have almost the sense that I'm just on my own enjoying good things.
Mm-hmm.
Isolated way, but that is actually an illusion.
Sure.
You know, because like what I would say is like go into isolation without anyone's help, without any resources, and build an iPhone. Right?
Right.
I mean, there's no way you could do it. Like every, you know, people use those every day, and there's been literally far more people contributing to our lives than are in a subsistence level or
right.
Village. You know, where that's, you know, a few people working together.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of people that are contributing to our lives to even make it function on a daily basis. And that's just something we don't think about, or it's kind of nameless or faceless.
Right.
So, I mean, that's beside the point, but either way, it's not in our awareness.
Yeah, we don't really have the opportunity to rely on God as...
It's not in our awareness that you were talking about, getting back to the incarnation thing. It's not even in the awareness in the church as much as it used to be. Like
oh sure,
back 400, you know, in the year 400 or 200, you know, after Jesus was on earth, they hung their belief on the fact that Jesus was God. But I don't know that we do that now. I don't know that it's that the church or Christians really hammer that home, so to speak, as much. I mean, all the creeds, and I know you've quoted them in a recent article you did, or you're getting ready to do. I think.
Oh, it's published.
It's published
on westwhite.net.
Yes, and we say them at church, and lots of churches, you know, repeat those, recite them or whatever. But they all have the language of the incarnation and Jesus being God. And we don't really hear that much anymore.
I'm not sure I'm completely convinced that's true. But in the church, I would say it is. I have heard it in the church, and I heard it growing up. But I think it's there's a greater kind of when you walk out into the world of Starbucks and Walmart and Home. Well, Walmart has a good Christian book section. at least in Tennessee. and the corporate world, you know, there's not like, where does this Jesus is God thing go? So let me contrast that though to the time in which the New Testament was written and the historical time period in which Jesus came. One thing we need to be aware of is, however strange this idea that of God becoming man may seem to people today, it was not strange at all in their time. There was kind of a fluidity almost between, there were lots of gods, and then men and gods, human beings and gods, kind of could mix together. And a lot of times when they found a person who did extraordinary things, they would say, this is a god. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see that in the New Testament, in Acts chapter 14, that when Paul and Barnabas do a healing, so again, we're talking about the supernatural here, but they do a healing, the people then say, this is Zeus and Hermes, two of the Greek gods, come amongst us. But, you know, again, whatever credence you put to that passage, you know, if you're a believer or not, the fact is that that's how they would have looked at things. So the claim that Jesus is God, as they heard about Jesus, they very well could have thought, here's Zeus come to us in human form, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Right.
So that actually led to other types of issues. Like for us, we almost have to say, is there a supernatural? That's where we kind of have to start with the idea that there would actually be a supernatural, that it matters, that it's knowable, that it's real. For them, that was not something that they had to prove or would even thought of having to prove in the first century. They would have said, they would have had other issues to deal with that arose from their particular context.
So we can, maybe in preparation for Christmas, meditate on the fact that God does supernatural things. And then moving on from that, my question is, why does the incarnation matter? Like, why was it necessary?
In other words, what difference does it make that God is, like, whether you accept or not, or grasp or not, that Jesus was God, both God and man? That's what we're saying, or it's what the Bible says. Remember, that's what we're talking about. What difference does it make? Why does he have to be God?
So I think that some of that. Well, I think that there's more. I think there's more that can be said than. I think that might move a little bit too quickly.
Okay.
So one is, like, I mean, even the way you frame the question, to me it seems like there is a supernatural, that God does supernatural things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we gotta, when we're engaging with the culture, we gotta even talk about. I mean, if you believe there is a God, it's not a big jump to say
there are supernatural things,
right? But it, you know, so that's kind of like, once you grant that that's true, mm-hmm. then you can believe that's the case. So but then there's the practical. If you do believe in God, then what sort of interaction does he have? What sort of interaction does he have with the world? And I would say that one of the things is, if we believe in the incarnation would have something to say about that.
Okay.
That there is a specific, that God is very interested in the world and wants to connect with the world. And that's, I think, one of the big points of the incarnation, is that if God became a human being, then that means that he came amongst us. That means that God has a real and significant interest in this world and wants to connect with us.
Mm-hmm.
in a very profound way that is astonishing. So, I mean, again, whether you agree with it or not, that's clearly an implication of the incarnation.
So the implication is if you believe that God became man, you really need to wrestle through. That means he wants to know us and wants to be involved in our lives.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think there's other ways we could know that too, but I think that that's a particularly profound way.
It is particularly profound. I was listening to R.C. Sproul talk this week, and one of the things I thought was neat about the incarnation that he was talking about was that there are so many times in Jesus's life where his glory could not be held in his humanity, and so there were things like his birth that had some divine elements to it, where, you know, the skies filled where the shepherds were, and filled with angels. And I just thought that was a neat thing to think about, that his humanity couldn't always hold back his glory.
So I think about that. There's a couple things. One is, so if it was a God become a man, then the question is Jesus really even a human? Like, is he a real human being? If it's the Son of God, mm-hmm, become a human being, is that really a human being as we even think about it? Because you're talking about some of the limitation,
right?
But is that really a human being as we think about it?
Right. And what conclusion have you come to?
What did we come to?
You.
Oh, did we come to?
Well, that would have been as difficult for the writers of the Gospels either, because they saw him. He ate in front of me. He lived right in front of me. They could see a person, a human there. So would it be less difficult for them than it is maybe for us?
He did very human things.
Like what?
Ate, died, you know, went to the bathroom. I don't know.
Say that in the Bible? No. But I think he did. He slept, he wept.
Mm-hmm. He grieved.
He had anger, you know, at things. He learned. Mm-hmm. He grew. So all those things. So the early church, you know, kind of as they wrestled with this, you know, there was kind of a different options presented as a way of thinking through this. So one option would be that there's a human being who's a person who's connected to God in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are two people that are closely united, like friends. But they said, no, it's one person, the eternal Son of God, become a human being. And because Jesus is a he, not a they.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then the question is, well, then this kind of putting together of God and man, is that kind of like a third thing, this mixture or composition of God and human beings? And they said, no, it's a human nature in all that a human nature is, but it's a divine person. Mm-hmm. Now that's still mysterious, but they're just trying to put limits on it, and that's what the classic definition adopted at the Council of Chalcedon AD 451. So they recognize two natures without confusion, without change, without division, and without separation. So Jesus is still a human being. He's still God, of course. He's always been God, but he's still a human being. There's no separation. There's no mixture. So it's a fully human nature, fully divine nature. And the significance of that is just that the amazing idea that God can really identify with us and sympathize with us in such a profound way, because he's actually, as weird as this sounds, a human being now,
mm-hmm,
as well. But then it's not like there wasn't any sign that there was the divine nature present, like you're talking about, at the is birth, there's the angels, there's the shepherds, there's the star, mm-hmm. and so on, that announce his birth and innumerable other things. But also throughout his life that he does things that indicate that he's not merely human,
right?
But that he's also divine. So he weeps at the tomb of Lazarus, but because he's man. But he raises him because he is his because he is God,
right?
You know, he weeps over Jerusalem, but he curses the fig tree and makes it wither, mm-hmm. because he's God. And you can actually contrast that all the way through the Gospels, and some theologians have done that like really eloquently. It's some of my favorite quotes about the incarnation. And so I think that phenomena is really worth meditating on that you brought up. I gave a long way around to say yes to what you said.
He likes the long answers.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I thought all of those points were really good. I think one of the classic scriptures that points out Jesus's divinity and humanity would be John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. He is the Word, and he is the Word in flesh appearing.
Yeah, as the song says.
Yeah, and I'm thankful that we have the opportunity to meditate on that once a year at least, and hopefully more throughout the year.
Calls us back to make it a bigger meditation in our lives.
Yeah.
What about when he raised Lazarus? You know, you were talking about Wes, that he shows his divinity, or shows that he's God by raising Lazarus. Yet right before he does that, he prays to God. And that the reason I kind of say that is it reminds me of something that I read that you wrote about the Father and the Son interacting with each other. And you sort of alluded to that a few minutes ago when you were talking, but how about just expanding on that a little bit too?
So if you believe that Jesus is God, one option for thinking through that would be that he's God in the sense that he plays a different role. He's God, the one God, playing a different role. Like just like I'm a father, son, friend, pastor, so on. But in the Bible you have the Father and the Son interacting with each other. So I don't interact with myself as Father and Son. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm the same person.
Right.
So the fact that, and Jesus even says in John 8, I am one witness and the Father is one witness. But yeah, in another sense, we're one. So, but it can't be in the sense that they're only one person. They're two persons. So that's where we get the doctrine of the Trinity. The Father, Son, Holy Spirit, three persons and one eternal God forever. And I think it's present in the Bible outside of before in the Old Testament as well. But with the incarnation, that just comes to the fore, you know, with Jesus becoming human. So it becomes clearer, shines brighter, that truth of who God is, which is really mysterious and wonderful, but it shouldn't be too surprising that there's something about God that's way above what we could think or imagine.
So have we actually come to a conclusion about why it was necessary for him to do what he did, to become human?
Why
matters? Does it matter? Yeah.
So I think so far we've said two things, mm-hmm. as I count them.
Okay, go.
One is God's desire to connect with us. Mm-hmm. Secondly, that his ability to sympathize mm-hmm. with us and connect with us specifically as someone who sympathizes with us because he is fully human.
And I think there are more reasons, but specifically...
What are some of your favorite?
Well, I think I'm just kind of thinking in reference to our salvation, it mattered that he took on humanity. I'm not really sure I can explain that super well.
Give it a shot.
I don't even know.
No matter that he took on humanity and also that he had the divinity.
To our salvation.
It matters that he was God too.
Yeah, it matters that he was God because he was able to then perfectly live out what we could not live out.
See, I think that that's commonly said, but okay. I'm not sure that that's... I think that there's nothing in human nature per se that would keep it from obeying God perfectly.
But right? After the fall,
yeah, and,
right?
There, right. So, but I'm not as certain that that is a specific reason why we need the incarnation. So, I mean, it's not that... In other words, a perfect human being could also perfectly obey God. So I'm not seeing that. That would be just my view that the divinity is not necessary for that.
But once the fall happened, there was no chance of a perfect human being.
I mean, I think
because
this gets somewhat speculative.
It does, but we have an inherent sinful nature.
But hypothetically, God could have created a perfect human being and kept that human being from the sinfulness of humanity.
Sure.
So, anyways, I'm
wouldn't that have changed the whole concept of just what she's saying, that sin entered the world, entered man, or, you know, humans through the fall? So if God now creates a human, just human, only human, no divinity whatsoever, and makes them perfect, doesn't that change the whole dynamic of what he's doing?
Here's what I want to keep away from, and that my thought would be, I don't want to describe God's requirements in a way that are impossible for humanity, as such, as if God was originally demanding of human beings something that they could not do.
Originally,
yeah,
like Adam and Eve originally.
Yeah, yeah. And as if God required of humans something that was so far outside them that only as God could that ever actually be done.
Right, but I'm referencing, like, once sin entered the world, that was not something that a human could do, which is...
I'm not convinced that that's the right way to think about it, but that's okay.
Okay.
So,
another podcast.
So that's the... But on the other hand, I look at it more from, I mean, let's just say, I don't think that we are completely wrong in what you're saying, in my view.
It's okay, Wes.
But I just say, like, I just think it requires a little more, that's sure. A little more nuance. On the other side, like, you have the punishment of sin, which, of course, humans could take. And I think that is the clearest instance in which that we have the necessity of the divine nature in a human being. So first of all, that God himself is not capable of suffering. So God cannot, like, and so, like, when we right. when we say, like, cannot, you know, I'm like, his nature, like, there are, and by the way, there are some things that God cannot do.
Right.
Right?
And that's okay. So,
He can't lie.
That's right.
Because it's not in his nature.
He can't make a rock too so big he can't pick it up.
Because it's not in his nature.
Because it's a logical contradiction. So.
Right.
But he cannot suffer. It's okay. Not in his nature, as you said. Very good. So as a human, he was able to suffer, right? But the sufferings of one human for another human would just mean that he would suffer forever, the eternity
right.
of hell, in our place. But because his suffering is the suffering not of a mere human, but of the God-man, then that suffering has, I'd say, infinite value. It makes up some way. At times I talk about it and say the infinite duration of the punishment and the infinite value of the person. So that's is made up for, so
okay.
that it's fully sufficient to atone for the sins or make up for the sins of the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, and there's a quote I have here from Martin Luther that kind of puts these things together. We Christians must know that if God is not also in the balance and gives the weight, we sink to the bottom with our scale. So mm-hmm. he's thinking of a scale with two sides. Mm-hmm. Here's God on one side. Here's us on the other side. If it's not God on the other side, then we sink down. Mm-hmm. By this I mean, if it were not to be said, God has died for us, but only a man, we should be lost. But if God's death and God died lie in the scale of the balance, then he sinks down and we rise up as a light empty scale. But indeed he can also rise again or leap out of the scale. Yet he could not sit in the scale unless he became a man like us. So he takes that metaphor and really plays around with it.
But it does capture it. Yeah. It captures it because that is why Christmas is such a celebration. Yes. Because not only did God come and show his desire to know us, but he had the ability to rescue us and rescue himself.
Yes, that's right.
So
yeah.
That's kind of what it sounds like Martin Luther is saying.
And when you think about that, you know, I think everybody recognizes that humanity's got sort of an issue, a mm-hmm. problem from which they need to be saved in some sense. But what the incarnation tells us is, A, that problem, agreeing with that, there is a problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is much worse than we actually ever thought. Our separation from God is much worse. But the solution then is also way better mm-hmm. and more complete than we ever could have thought. So that's the significance mm-hmm. of the incarnation to me.
Very good. I agree. So Lacey, you want to toss any other tough ones at him?
I don't want to toss any tough ones. I was just thinking, you know, we give each other gifts at this time, and I'm thankful that Jesus was willing to give us the gift of becoming a human and dwelling with us.
And ultimately, the gift was love. You know, God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. Not and this might be a different direction too, but not God so needed to save the world that he sent his Son, or not, you know, mankind is doomed, so he sent his Son. I mean, it was because he loved. And you know, then, I don't know the exact quote, but it says, God demonstrated his love in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for mm-hmm. us. So I guess what I'm getting at is I kind of think that's really what wraps it all up, is God, the whole plan of God, when we talk about God's plan, was to show us that he loves us. And how could I understand God's love? How could I understand, you know, God says, I love you. How could I really grasp that? And the way that I could really grasp that is because he came mm-hmm. here to earth as, you know, as a human, and lived, you know, one human life, and then died at the end to demonstrate his love, you know, for me, for all of us.
Philippians 2 talks about how Jesus didn't hold so tightly to his divinity that he wasn't willing to humble himself and become a human. And I think that just wraps up Christmas in a nice little package for us.
With a bow?
Yep.
Put a bow on it. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for sharing today. And Merry Christmas again. And Happy New Year, because we won't be talking again till 2020.
Next decade.
Till the next decade. That's amazing. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, everyone out there. God bless you, and Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm.